away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been.
I'm hoping that you drop
so
in.
Very nice.
Hold your hands there just like I.
My mother will.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are. This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Dr. Wonders.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway.
Really can't stay.
Baby, don't hold on. But it's cold outside.
Merry Christmas! Ho, ho, ho! This is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
Tonight we're going to talk about the Christmas classic Elf, directed in 2003 by Jon Favreau.
Christmas classic, huh?
It's going to appear on Christmas on TV every single year for the rest of eternity.
That is such a sad state of affairs.
You're not digging it?
I'm not a huge fan of this movie. And I will say that the depth to which I took notes to this movie amounts to two sentences.
Oh, no. Usually you have several pages.
This is a true story. But I think this can be best be summed up by one of my friends who was texting me. Hold on.
Did Santa come down your chimney? Is that what we heard?
Yeah. No, I got hit in the face with the microphone. No, Santa did not come down my chimney. I don't have a chimney like that. Sorry. So this is the text exchange between my friend and I. What are you doing? I'm watching a movie for my podcast. I see. Which movie? And did you like it? Elf. It was not terrible. Elf? With Will Ferrell? I find it interesting that you didn't hate it. For some reason, I didn't think you tolerate that kind of humor very much. My response? It wasn't great. Well, hopefully you'll get a movie that you like better next week.
Hmm.
So, at any rate, this wasn't the worst movie I've ever seen, but I wouldn't sit through this movie again. I don't... Maybe I'm a cold, heartless bastard with, you know, black tar running through my veins. Although I'm a pretty Christmassy guy, so this movie just didn't really... I don't know. It was only incidentally a Christmas movie.
It was about Santa and the elves.
Kind of. It was more about the bastard elf.
Not a bastard, just adopted.
Well, that's true.
Well, no, I'm sorry. Actually, he was a bastard, but he was also adopted elf.
Well, okay.
Let's dial back just a moment. Name some Christmas movies that you actually like.
Christmas movies that I actually like. Gremlins is one.
Yeah, I hope there'll be some on the calendar.
You know, I haven't seen Gremlins in a long time, so it's hard to say if I still like Gremlins. You know, I like A Christmas Story. I do like It's a Wonderful Life. Nightmare Before Christmas, I like, although you can debate whether that's Halloween or Christmas. We reviewed Scrooged, which is a great Christmas movie. Die Hard is a pretty good Christmas movie.
So it's not the fact that it's a Christmas movie that irritates you.
No, no. I don't have anything against Christmas movies in general. You know, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. You know, that's a great Christmas movie, even though, again, it's incidentally Christmas, but it's, you know, to me, it's kind of my Christmas movie now.
What did you think about those Rankin Bass animated shows like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?
I have mixed feelings about them. I mean, I have nostalgic recall of them from my childhood, but they were never really, I mean, after the first time you've seen them, at least for me, they were so cloyingly emotionally manipulative that I just didn't watch them again. And maybe again, maybe that's the my coal tar running through my veins and my black heart for Christmas. You know, I have fondness out of reverence, but not necessarily fondness that I want to see them again, because I think that watching, because I've seen parts of them as an adult nowadays, and I think watching them as an adult just kind of ruins kind of some of that recall that you get, you know, that your memory is kind of fluidic and elastic, and so you're a little more forgiving of those memories of your childhood because they're not quite as sharp as something that you just watched last night and only got two sentences on paper for. So you're a little less critical because your recall has kind of softened the rough edges a little bit.
Okay, fair enough. I just wanted to see if you were a true Grinch or you just didn't like this particular movie.
I don't think I'm a Grinch. This movie just didn't do it for me. And again, there were a couple parts I chuckled. So like I said, it's not the worst movie I've ever seen, but I just don't, I don't understand. Well, I won't say I don't understand. I was awestruck that the budget was $33 million. It made that on opening weekend to surpass to gross $173 million.
Oh yeah. And its total box office was $220 million.
So,
and that's just clearly, box office. It's going to be on cable every single year because it's a relatively decent family movie.
Yeah, it's a pretty clean movie. I mean, there's not a lot of adult themes or not a lot of swearing. I don't think there was really any nudity to speak of.
No, and there was like basically there was a 12-second long belch, and that's the level of comedy we're talking about.
And surprisingly, no toilet humor. Well, except for him squatting on the miniature toilet.
Well, I'm going to show this movie to my daughter here soon, and we'll see what her reaction is to it.
You know, there was obvious some highlights of this, which, you know, Andy Richter was kind of a nice little cameo. Peter Dinklage was, you know, a nice cameo. Zooey Deschanel, I'm fond of Zooey Deschanel. Mary Steenburgen did a great part. James Caan, though, just, he seemed horribly miscast. Almost like he was acting in another movie that was way more dramatic.
That just may be him, though.
It may be.
Shall we dive into the plot, though?
Yeah, sure.
The film opens with Papa Elf telling us a story. And all the costumes on purpose were to match the Rankin-Bass elf costumes from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. So that was on purpose. And there was a lot of claymation or stop motion animation, and that was also on purpose. So Papa Elf tells this story about the three jobs an elf can have, which I thought was actually pretty clever.
Oh, hello. You're probably here about the story. Elves love to tell stories. I bet you didn't know that about elves. There's probably a lot of things you didn't know about elves. Another interesting elfism. There are only three jobs available to an elf. The first is making shoes at night while the old cobbler sleeps.
Lazy bum. Couldn't even make a clog.
You can bake cookies in a tree. As you can imagine, it's dangerous having an oven in an oak tree during the dry season. But the third job, some call it the show or the big dance. It's the profession that every elf aspires to, and that is to build toys in Santa's workshop.
Only 2 weeks left till Christmas.
It's a job only an elf can do. Our nimble fingers, natural cheer, and active minds are perfect for toy building. They tried using gnomes and trolls, but the gnomes drank too much. And the trolls weren't toilet trained. No human being has ever set foot in Santa's workshop. That is, until about 30 years ago, and as you may have guessed, that's where our story begins.
Yeah, I actually wrote that down. Plus, I wrote down that, you know, gnomes drink too much and trolls aren't potty trained.
Yes. Yeah. Pretty funny, actually.
It was actually amusing. Like I said, there are some funny parts.
Yeah. Well, but one Christmas Eve, during a stop at an orphanage, a baby boy named William, captivated by the sight of a teddy bear, crawls into Santa Claus's sack of gifts while he's delivering toys. Santa Claus, of course, is Ed Asner. Lou Grant. So Santa accidentally takes the boy back to the North Pole, and when he's discovered, they name him Buddy because he's wearing little Buddy diapers. And instead of like a responsible saint of Christmas, he keeps the child and lets Papa Elf raise the child.
Well, I think that because he was from an orphanage, he felt that it just wasn't right to take him back.
Well, I suppose. But anyway, it furthers the story.
It'd be a different story if he'd been abducted from a home that had, you know, parents and family that loved him, but he was basically in an orphanage where he was just tossed away.
That's true. So it's surprising he didn't have, like, something attachment disorder.
Oh.
That's,
perhaps.
Orphanage kids who
get... Maybe not, though. Maybe it was, you know, he was adopted by his elven brethren, and so that may have cushioned the blow. And then being brought up in an environment where you eat nothing but candy and make toys.
Yeah, well, so Buddy, Will Ferrell, grows up in the pole, and he's unaware of his humanity. And Papa Elf makes him his apprentice after he fails at all the other jobs an elf would do at the North Pole. And Papa Elf's special job is to repair the Kringle 3000, 500 reindeer-powered jet engine on Santa's sleigh, which he invented in the 60s to supplement the Christmas spirit that had begun to wane. And now the Christmas spirit is almost to nothing. And apparently reindeers fly based upon Christmas spirit. So those are the rules of this story. So Buddy's just not good at being an elf, or just not good at doing elf jobs. And he's not really picked on, actually. He's more pitied by the other elves.
He seems like the man in a place, and they feel bad for him.
And so they have no ill will toward him, unlike the reindeer and Rudolph. But when Buddy discovers that he's human, he asks Papa Elf about it, and Papa Elf gives him the story and tells him he was born to Walter Hobbs, James Caan, and Susan Wells, and given up for adoption. And like all good comedies, Walter doesn't know that Susan had a baby. And then, like any Disney movie, which is, I believe, is not, Mom dies, and Walter now works at a children's book company in New York City.
Is that what I missed that part? I must have. So I never got that the mother was dead.
Yeah, Mom died, which is why Buddy's in an orphanage.
That would have been way too complicated, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Well, she died of HIV. Actually, it was in one of the deleted scenes. It's okay. It was from sharing needles.
I assume you're joking.
Yeah, I am joking, of course. So,
I didn't realize this was a black comedy Christmas movie.
Oh, white people get HIV too. Anyway,
very funny.
So Buddy is convinced by Leon the Snowman, played by Leon Redbone.
Looks like Wilford Brimley, by the way.
A little bit. Well, as a snowman.
Yeah.
In real life, he doesn't look anything like Wilford Brimley.
No. sugar diabetes.
Do you remember the first time you heard Leon Redbone? Because I do.
I couldn't pinpoint it.
Well, you might think it was from the theme song to Mr. Belvedere.
Oh, no. Long before that.
Yep. It was Herb Shanlon playing I Want to Be Seduced, or maybe the song is just called Seduced.
Yeah.
I want to be seduced. Want a woman to take me out to dinner for two. Like to see her eyes get moody. Flirting with the thought of what flirting ought to do. Like to be real cool. Let her think about getting rid of me in bed. Here's a chat about Magna Carta. Puerto Vallarta. Something Gandhi said. I'm a gentleman, politely, all the slightly, Then she tried to fondle my knees. But I'm relatively certain I'd compromise if I know me.
You're absolutely right.
Yep.
If somehow not even before that from our parents, but although I can't see our parents being giant Leon Redbone fans.
No. I see the parents as being cool enough to have heard of him, but I don't know. I know we didn't have any Leon Redbone records. So Leon the Snowman tells Buddy to go to New York City to find his father. And prior to leaving though, Santa sort of inadvertently spills it that Walter, the father, is on the naughty list because he's greedy and insensitive. So then we cut to New York City, where Buddy is a fish out of water in some hilarious, but, you know, not altogether original little bits.
So I have a question, because I couldn't figure this out. He seems to have some elven powers of him for being a human.
He does, and I don't understand it either.
Because they don't explain that, but he's able to traverse by walking without any fatigue from the North Pole to New York after standing on an ice floe.
Yes, not to mention that he's not dressed for the weather.
I mean, of course, you have to also, you know, he was, you know, conversing with a narwhal, so
yes.
Clearly he had some talents.
Of course, yes. Yeah, there may be some sort of Christmas magic, but it's not explained, which is fine. Again, this is I'm contending that this is a children's movie, although there's some mixed signals coming up.
Yeah, I don't know. I would think the whole Zoe Deschanel in a shower thing is not really a kid's thing. Plus them serenading each other with, you know,
with Baby It's Cold Outside. That's my problem with the whole movie.
It's the Cosby song.
Exactly. Did you happen to see the Key and Peele sketch on the Baby It's Cold Outside?
No.
Oh, it's well worth seeing.
All right.
Yeah,
I love Key and Peele.
Yeah, it's great. It totally, it just dramatizes the date rape part of the song.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I like the song. I like the, so there's a few covers I really like. Robert Palmer does a cover that I really actually quite like. So, you know, I have to divorce myself of the creepy part of the song and just kind of enjoy the song, you know, kind of some of the premise of the song.
Michael Bublé does a duet with somebody, famously.
Well, that's almost always a true story.
Yeah, well, that's, by the way,
Hammond Bublé.
Leon, hello. The thing about Christmas movies and Christmas music is that it sells. So maybe in our lifetime we'll see that wane, but still today, people put out brand new Christmas albums of music.
Well,
because people,
of course,
love...
there's a plethora of reasons why artists like to record Christmas songs. First of all, don't have to pay royalties to the songwriters.
Well, that's true.
On a lot of them, because they're old standards. So
yeah,
they're kind of public domain. Also, they're familiar, so fans like them because they can sing along to them. And so it kind of, you know, it kind of gives you that audience participation part.
And they're catchy.
Well, that too. And having worked in records and tapes and then later, you know, music market and having to suffer through Christmas and the holidays and the It's a Very Special Christmas volume 1 through 8,000. There are collection albums of great Christmas songs, purportedly, that I never want to hear again so long as I live.
Well, there's so many different kinds of Christmas songs. There's over so many different genres and so many different genre takes on the old classics. Like, I think one of my favorite Christmas songs is We Three Kings done by The Odds.
It's bitter perfume, breeze alive of gathering gloom, sowing, sighing, bleeding, dying, sealed in a stone cold tomb.
they do a great job. You know, the odds, heterosexual man. Yeah, we did a Christmas CD at work of people's favorite songs, and I still like it. Oh, it's no. great. It's everything from Charlotte Church as a child to the Brothers Karamazov, I think, Hawaiian Christmas music.
Shopping, shopping, shopping till a quarter to ten. Coming back tomorrow with more money to spend. Gonna have to come back here on Wednesday again.
Hey, cut that Visa card.
Oh. I wrap and wrap and wrap until the end of the day. Making bows and ribbon out of gold and lame.
Lele Kaliki Maka.
Go away, brother, that's why
hard. Give back my credit card.
It was the night before Christmas, and all through the holly they were singing and dancing. And Hopo Molly Molly, a mama in her moo, and me in my malo, greeting Ikane, Behea Mahalo. Sister gathered flowers for a lay. Brother watched the emu all through the day. Soon the music boys began to play. The mele old and new of Hawaii. The tables were loaded. Plenty of cacao, obihi and salmon, and steaming hot laulau. We ate and told story until we were pow. It was really my kahi at the Christmas luau. Sister gathered flowers for...
And the parody song, Police Stop My Car.
Oh, God.
Police stop my car. Police stop my car. The police made me stop. Walk a straight line and blow a balloon up. They wanna wish me a sober Christmas. That's why they always pull me over Christmas. They say they're just making sure that there's no open bottles in my car. They wanna wish me a sober Christmas. That's why they always pull me over Christmas. They say they're just making sure that there's no open bottles in my car.
Yeah, I will just go on record as saying Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band singing Santa Claus is Coming to Town makes me want to kill myself. That's one of those. Madonna's Santa Baby makes me kind of want to peel my skin off and roll in rock salt.
What about the Chipmunk Christmas song?
See, I have a special fondness for the Chipmunks, so almost anything Chipmunks and I'm in.
Because we had the red vinyl.
We had the red album.
Yes.
Yeah. I also had the Urban Cowboy.
Urban Chipmunk
album.
I remember that album.
That was given by our grandfather.
Oh,
Grandpa,
yeah.
Clyde.
And how about the Peanuts Gang with Christmas Time is Here?
You know, I'm not a big Peanuts fan. I'm a huge Woodstock fan. And I like Snoopy, but the Peanuts, not so much.
By the way, Ring Those Bells, the Brothers Casimiro. And how about Garth Brooks, Santa Look a Lot Like Daddy.
Well, Santa looked a lot like Daddy, or Daddy looked a lot like him. It's not the way I had him pictured. Santa wasn't much too thin. He didn't come down the chimney, so Mama must have let him in. Santa looked a lot like Daddy. Daddy looked a lot like him.
Garth Brooks? Is that what you're saying?
Garth Brooks. Oh. Santa looked a lot like Daddy. Which turns out...
I think Garth Brooks did an entire Christmas album.
Oh, yeah.
Beyond the Season. Yeah, see, that's entirely a Christmas album. Yeah, no, Christmas albums are easy sales because don't have to do a lot of writing or arranging or producing. All you got to do is get an artist that can sing and show up not drunk.
Well, and Christmas movies are, you know, family favorites around the holidays, at least on television and cable.
Yeah, because usually they're cheap movies to replay.
Well, and Hallmark has made a whole, like, living on things like Santa Baby, and or maybe that's even Lifetime. You know, those kind of channels can dish out the schmaltz around Christmas time.
You can play It's a Wonderful Life and A Christmas Story, and you can roll out a whole bunch of those 3 or 4 times a day. And, you know, you can get lots of viewership.
Oh, yeah. It's a little like horror movies around Halloween.
Like shooting fish in a barrel.
Something like that. So, anyway, speaking of shooting fish in a barrel, Buddy is in New York City, where he has a fish out of water in a barrel. And there's some stupid parts to it. There's some funny parts. I kind of do like the fact that he sees the sign that says world's best cup of coffee, and he goes in to congratulate them.
Buddy has some unadulterated joy that he expounds with just a barely a moment's notice.
Well, that's the thing, is that Will Ferrell is good at playing this kind of character. Buddy the elf, or the Buddy the human, he is guileless. He is innocent, and it never changes.
Yep.
And that, you know, what makes Will Ferrell funny is when he is playing it in completely straight, but also very goofy. And I can see where people would think that, this would be a good Saturday Night Live sketch and not a good 2-hour movie or 1 hour and 40 minute movie. But I think an hour 40 is just fine for this. It's not harming anybody. You know, they're not breaking any ground with the plot, but it's still sort of fun because, Buddy goes to visit his dad and Walter lets him in thinking that he's doing a Christmas gram. But then Buddy tells him he's his son and Walter has security throw him out, and security tells him to go to Gimbel's, where he meets the manager, Faison Love, who mistakes him for a Santaland elf. Now, you've either read or heard the Santaland Diaries, the David Sedaris?
I don't believe so.
Oh, you need to seek out the Santaland Diaries. I think it's part of the audiobook Holidays on Ice. And
I think I have that.
Yeah, so the Santaland Diaries is part of that, where he plays his elf name was Crumpet.
I may have listened to it. Is that the book cover with the rocks glass with booze in it?
Yes.
I must have either read it or heard it on audiobook.
I think, yeah. But it's pretty funny. And that's why when she first meets Buddy, Jovi, played by Zooey Deschanel, asks him did Crumpet put you up to this? Crumpet is David Sedaris' elf name. And by the way, did you notice that Walter's secretary is Amy Sedaris?
I did. It made me laugh out loud.
Yeah. She's pretty great, but also a weirdo. And I guess the elf Ming Ming is played by Peter Billingsley, who's Ralphie Parker in A Christmas Story, which audience will hear our commentary on.
Awesome.
Yeah. So we meet Jovi, Zooey Deschanel. And I am trying to think if I have liked Zooey Deschanel in any movie she's ever been in.
I think the sadder commentary is that I can't identify a movie she's ever been in.
Well, I've never seen 500 Days of Summer. And I know she was in Pleasantville, which I didn't really like. It was fine.
Oh no. I love Pleasantville.
Yeah. She.
You didn't like Pleasantville?
Not particularly.
Oh, no. Now we have to watch it.
Okay, well.
Going on the list.
Okay. But, and like her TV show, and it just, and of course her singing, to me, she just seems so twee.
Well, I think she's, and I like her. I don't like, on a scale of 1 to 10, she's like a 7.5. I like her voice sometimes, but she's one of those people that I describe as like, you can tell when she's singing, she has a smile.
Yeah.
You know how you can hear in someone's voice that they're always smiling?
Yeah, I could do that.
And I don't always trust that in an artist when they're always smiling, because it's like, you're murdering kittens at home. I know it. Not that, of course, that Zooey Deschanel is murdering kittens at home. I'm just saying.
No, well, and I think she actually does a good job in this movie, because her character is an elf, she is a person who has a job of a Christmas elf in a department store. And it's just a J-O-B to her. She is not infected with any Christmas spirit.
She's almost the Terry of elves.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Or to a wider audience, she would be the Janine Garofalo of elves.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. Although, I think much like Janine Garofalo, I don't like Zooey Deschanel as a blonde. It was jarring to me.
Oh.
But okay. That's just me. And that's, by the way, why I thought it was Samantha Mathis who was starring in this movie, until I realized, no, it's Zooey Deschanel. Mm. But anywho, Buddy, of course, isn't innocent, but is dressed the part, so he's going to be an elf at Santa Land. And Faison Love is giving him the assignments, and Santa's coming the next day, which Buddy is overjoyed at because he knows Santa. And so Buddy spends the night making Christmas decorations for Santa's arrival, including a giant Lego model. And he also makes a purchase for his dad because it's for someone special. And it's a nightie, so he gets thrown out of his dad's office again.
I was just most impressed by the light, bright pictures.
Oh, yeah. No, it's very clever. And the scene where when Buddy meets the store Santa, played by Artie Lang, of all people, which is great. You know, Buddy is horrified in a scene that I will put in here. It's very funny.
Santa.
It's me!
Who the heck are you?
What are you talking about? I'm Santa Claus.
No, you're not.
Why, of course I am!
Well, if you're Santa, what song did I sing for you on your birthday this year?
Happy birthday, of course! how old are you, son?
Four.
You're a big boy. What's your name?
Paul.
And what can I get you for Christmas?
Don't tell him what you want. He's a liar.
Let the kid talk.
You disgust me. How can you live with yourself?
Just cool it, Zippy.
You sit on a throne of lies.
Look, I'm not kidding.
You're a fake.
I'm a fake?
Yes.
How'd you like to be dead? Huh? No, he's kidding.
You stink.
I think you're gonna have a good Christmas, all
right? You smell like beef and cheese. You don't smell like Santa.
Okay, go.
He's an imposter! He's a fake! He's a fake!
Well, I, as somebody who had a light bright set and was never any good at it ever, I'm always impressed when I see awesome displays of light bright.
Oh, yeah.
Because it just gives me a little bit of jealousy that my artistic ability never manifested in such an outward way.
Well, I don't really think of a lot of modern artists citing their influence as light bright. I could be wrong, but...
No, I'm just saying, though, it was awesome to see it utilized in a way that really showcased its ability in an ability in such a way that I have no talent and no one that I know who possessed one of them had such a talent.
Well, if I remember correctly, there were a lot of just black pieces of paper with very light white markings on for templates.
Yeah.
Unless you wanted to just freeball it and that would be, you know, or sorry, freestyle it.
Yeah, one is something you want, one is probably not good for a Christmas family podcast.
Well, but much like Buddy tells Artie, you smell like beef and cheese, you don't smell like Santa. I think there may be a Light Bright app. It's not branded Light Bright.
For like, of course not.
But yeah, I think there is one.
I know that you could buy a Light Bright keychain a couple of years ago, and that was the rage.
Oh, well. It's good to have. See, again, Christmas things.
Because people like me buy stuff like that as like impulse purchases.
Of course.
Like yes. Stocking stuffers. I would buy those as stocking stuffers for anybody in the house. I wouldn't buy them for myself because I never buy those for myself. But I was giving to everybody else and then, you know, just kind of stew quietly that I didn't buy one for myself.
Well, you watch everyone else play the with the light brights.
Exactly.
Or worse, they seem to take no care. Don't seem interested in the light bright that you want to play with.
Exactly. Then I just kind of stew quietly and plot their untimely demise by eggnog.
So at this point, Buddy is jailed for having a physical fight with Santa at Santa Land and Gimbel's. And Walter bails him out and takes him, strangely, to a pediatrician, John Favreau, for a DNA test. The fastest DNA test in the world. And they confirm that Buddy is Walter's son. And the doctor tells him to take him home. He's clearly psychotic, but take him home. Meet his stepmother, Emily.
Yeah, because that's what you would do if you had a psychotic child descend on you instantly, is you would just take them home and endanger the rest of your family.
Yes, your wife, Mary Steenburgen, and your 12-year-old son, Michael, played by Daniel Tay.
Yeah, although you expect that the 12-year-old is going to be like... slicing up kittens or setting fire to his bedroom anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's a 12-year-old sort of thing. And of course, Buddy is so enthusiastic about everything, especially dinner, where he has spaghetti with maple syrup and M&Ms.
Oh, God. Oh, it's so gut-wrenching to watch.
But eventually, Michael, the brother, and Woody, and Buddy bond over the fact that on the way home from school, Michael gets ambushed in a snowball fight, but Buddy has incredible elf snowball skills and beats all the other kids. At one point, I think he knocks out a child.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So probably concussion there. Could be a brain bleed. The kid could have died.
Yeah.
But, oh well, that's not that kind of movie. In the meantime, Michael is now friends with Buddy and wants to help Buddy ask Jovi out on a date, which is sort of fun. And Walter, the dad, finds out from his boss, played by Michael Lerner, that the company is having trouble, or the company is in trouble, after publishing the book The Puppy and the Pigeon with two missing pages. Because Walter's like, it's too expensive to reprint all the books. Just leave the two pages out, which is kind of funny. Or not.
Well, I think it was satire that in kids' books, it doesn't really matter the content, but.
Yeah, so Walter has this deadline now on Christmas Eve, so it's kind of like a little bit of Ebenezer Scrooge, Jacob Marley, what's the name? Bob Cratchit. Is it Bob Cratchit? I'm confusing. Is it Robert J. Cratchit? Is that and then Timothy Cratchit's the child? I don't know. So
what are you?
Anyway, so So back to this particular movie. Walter sees Buddy down to the mailroom where. Well, okay, I guess this is the only non-PG part of the movie where Buddy gets drunk and bonds with the mail workers.
Yeah, like, oh, syrup. I love syrup.
And then
it was Mrs. Cratchit, Bob Cratchit's wife, who is named Emily, Martha Cratchit, the eldest daughter, Belinda Cratchit, the second daughter, Peter Cratchit, the heir, from whom his father is arranging employment, the unnamed younger son named Matthew in a later adaptation, Lucy Cratchit, and Timothy Tiny Tim Cratchit.
Well, that's a lot of kids. No wonder they were poor.
Yeah, well, you know. Only one or two of them is going to live long enough to be an adult, so you had to have lots of kids.
Well, exactly. And Tiny Tim, the gimpy one, he's not going to last very long. But don't waste your food on him.
The gummy leg. Got a gummy leg. Sorry, now I've just gone off into Monty Python land.
Yeah, that's okay. Anyway, so we get a fun dancing scene. And then later we get the scene of Jovi and Buddy going out on a date. And in the meantime, Walter... His head writers, he's brought his head writers in to brainstorm this idea, and their first idea was to hire this other writer, Miles Finch.
Which is hilarious.
Oh, yeah. No, actually, those guys, Kyle Gass and, why can't I remember his name?
Andy Richter.
Andy Richter, killing me, yeah. So, no, Andy Richter and Kyle Gass are hilarious as his head writers who don't have very good ideas. In fact, my favorite line is the title of the book that Kyle is writing.
Oh, what about this? A tribe of asparagus children, but they're self-conscious about the way their pee smells.
Yeah, I just think that's a hilarious idea. But instead, we meet Miles Finch, played by Peter Dinklage, who is always great. And, of course, Buddy thinks that Miles is an elf and Miles is a tremendous jackass. So he's like, you know, you feeling strong, my friend? Call me elf one more time. So that's sort of funny. And there's a physical fight there, too. And at the end of this little fight, Finch storms out. And, of course, Walter's going to get fired. So he's angry, and he basically tells Buddy to get out of his life. Doesn't care if he's his son or not, or he's crazy, just go. So Buddy goes home to write his goodbye message on the Etch-A-Sketch, apologizing for ruining Walter's life and cramming 11 cookies in the VCR.
Which the... younger listeners may not understand what a VCR is.
Exactly.
A VCR, kids, is this machine where you used to put physical tapes into that would wind around a head and then get tangled and you would have to pull out and pray that they didn't rip.
But unlike a DVD tray or a Blu-ray tray that comes out and you put your Blu-ray in, this would look more like a mouth that you could stuff things into if you were a child.
Yes. What, you mean the coffee tray, the coffee holder?
No, I mean the DVD the VCR, tray, coffee holder. VCR.
No, looks... I'm saying that the DVD player has a coffee mug holder.
Exactly, yes. It's good to have.
As opposed to the VCR, which is a place you could cook Pop-Tarts in.
Exactly. Walter finds in his office, they find out that Finch has left his idea book in their office. So they're going to steal, which is, of course, a good message. So Michael, the brother, finds the message Buddy left and bursts into Walter's board meeting and says, "Hey, Buddy's gone and you're a jackass dad." But realizing what he's done and convinced by Michael, Walter quits his job, runs out of the meeting, and is going to go find Buddy. So Buddy is walking through the streets and he sees Santa's sleigh crash in Central Park. And when he finds Santa, Santa explains that the engine is broken off and the last bit of Christmas spirit, which powers the sleigh, has faded as well. So they're screwed. So Buddy has to go on a mission to find the engine, and Walter and Michael end up finding Buddy, and the family gets back together. And then Buddy takes them to meet Santa, who tells them that believing in him can make the sleigh fly. So Michael grabs Santa's list and runs out to where the TV cameras are. By the way, the Central Park Rangers, who are the most sinister bad guys in a Christmas movie I've seen in a while.
Well, they were pretty badass. I thought of them, they were the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Oh, yeah. No, they were great. Yeah, they were after Santa on the mounted officers in their black leather and the black horses. It was very imposing. So there's the chaos of trying to get Santa's sleigh working and the engine and everything. And, of course, Jovi, who was in the crowd after seeing the events on TV, overcomes her shyness and starts singing Santa Claus is Coming to Town in her husky torch song voice. And everybody joins in, including Dad. And finally, the sleigh flies higher and they save Christmas. And then by next Christmas, Walter starts his own publishing company with the best-selling book released. The first one is titled Elf, an account of Buddy's adventures, written and illustrated by Buddy himself. And then sometime later, Buddy and Jovi are married and they have a daughter named Susie, and which is the deceased mom's name. And then they go to visit Papa Elf at the North Pole. The end. So, I don't think this is the best piece of cinema ever, but I think I just went into it with the right open spirit of, I am just going to take Will Ferrell as a complete innocent fish out of water and see where it takes me. And it was a good place. It wasn't bad. I enjoyed the movie.
Yeah, no, I didn't hate him in this movie. I don't hate him in general. I give him kudos for turning down $29 million to be in the sequel.
Yes, yes, me too. There's no need for a sequel to this movie.
Yeah, and there wasn't a sequel because he turned it down. But again, I give him credit for that.
Yeah, me too. No, Will Ferrell seems to be a good guy. I mean, he also seems to be pretty committed, kind of in that whole, you know, the whole improviser thing of like Steve Carell or Stephen Colbert. Is, you know, when they're in character, they could be super funny. But when they're not in character, they're probably not, like, you know, knee-slappingly funny. They're probably fairly serious people.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to judge because I've been watching Stephen Colbert on, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And it's hard to discern how much of the character is still him and how much of the real him is coming through. Although he's pretty heavily political even still, so...
Well, I mean, he's not pretending to be a super conservative, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So are we pretty much done with Elf? There are a couple of things I want to talk about related to it. We've already talked about Baby It's Cold Outside.
No, I can't. I mean, that covers all of my sparse, non-existent notes. So,
well, here's some notes I had. Bob Newhart reminds me of the interview I heard WTF. Mark Maron interviewed Shelley Berman. And Shelley Berman was known, among the routines he did were phone calls. So he'd get up on stage and he'd have this, you know, you'd hear one side of a phone call. And one of his most famous ones was where he called the department store to tell them that there was a woman who was going to jump off the 10th floor or something.
Oh, hello, Nichols Department Store. All right. Oh, yes, I'll wait. All right. Hey, Emergency, emergency. Hang on there for just a second. This is an emergency, and I'll let you go in just a second. See, here's the thing. See, you don't know me. I work in the office building right across the street from your store, and I was, Southwest, and I was just sitting. I was looking out of my window, and I noticed there's a woman hanging from a window ledge on your building about 10 flights up, and she's about, no, operator, you're missing the point. I don't wish to speak to the woman. No, I'd like somebody to go up there and pull her in. Well, I don't care who, you know, how about you? You're over there. What about yourself? What time is your coffee break? Well, I don't think she can wait till then. Who knows how long she's been hanging there before I noticed her. I can see her from here, and her knuckles are very white. The woman's been hanging there for hours, obviously, and I'm afraid she'll slip, before your break comes. I see. Well, do you think that department could help? Well, all right. Would you connect me, please? Thank you. Hello, complaint department. You don't know me. I work in the office building right across the street from your store, and no, the Southwest. And I was just sitting and looking out of my window, and no, pretty nice out. And I noticed there's a woman hanging from a window ledge on your store, about 10 flights up. She's about to fall down unless we get hello there. Hello, hello. Oh, hello, madam. Listen, what happened to the man I was just talking to? Oh, well, put a cold towel behind his neck. That'll bring him out of it. It's my fault. I scared him. See, here's the thing. See, you don't know me. I work in the office building right across the street from your store, Southwest, and I was just looking out of my window, and, no, it's pretty nice out, and there's a woman hanging from a window ledge on your building. She's going to fall down from there if we don't describe her. What for? Well, now, you can't have any trouble finding her. She's hanging out of a window over there. Lady, I'm looking at the building right now. She's the only one hanging out of a window. Well, I hate to take the time. Well, okay, gray hair, and she's a little chunky, and she's holding some packages between her legs. And, well, I can't tell from here if your store label is on the packages, madam. The woman's across the street. Well, what about the department on that floor? So just somebody open a window and pull her in. It's a simple... Well, would you connect me, please? Thank you. Hello, lingerie. Listen, you don't know me. I work in the office building right across the street from your store. And I was just sitting and looking out... Don't you want to know the corner, madam? It's a Southwest. And, I was just sitting looking out of my window, and it's a lovely day, and I know there's a woman. There's a woman hanging from a window ledge, and it looks to be on your floor, and I was just hoping that... I don't know how she got out there, lady. I've been sitting here looking at your building. It's a lingerie. Maybe she tried on something and snapped out. I don't know. Well, she's going to fall off unless we pull her in. I just talked to that department, madam. Well, okay. Hello, complaint department, it's me again. How are you feeling now, sir? Now, sir, you've got to get a hold of yourself and go up there and pull that poor woman in, and she's going to fall down from there. All right, you go up there and out the fine, and I'll just talk to her through this window and cheer her on as you go up. Lady, right over here across the street. Now, a little to lower, to the right, here. Hi, fine, thank you. Don't wave, madam, don't wave. Hang on with both hands. Listen, I'm getting some help for you. The man will be there in a minute. He'll pull you in. Listen, I think it'll be easier for you to hang out if you let those packages go from between your legs. That's all right. You got new ones. Let them go. That's right. There they go. That's right. Oh, poor fellow. All right, now, Madam, the umbrella over your arm. If you should slip, we don't know how much help this will be, but open it. It may slow your fall. No. It's only bad luck if you're inside, lady. Take a chance. There's the man. There. Reach up. Slowly, leg, other leg. That's it. Good. Thank you very much. Hello, operator. Say, would you send somebody up to the 10th floor? The complaint department man is hanging from a window ledge out there.
Well, Bob Newhart, his act was the same sort. I mean, different. The comedy was different, but it often involved the telephone and the one-sided phone conversation.
Hello, who's calling? Sir Walter Raleigh from the colonies. Yeah, put him on, will you? Harry, you pick up your extension, will you? It's Nutty Walt again. Hi, Walt, baby. Good hearing your voice. Things are fine here, Walt. The boatload of turkeys you sent us over here last November, they're still here, Walt.
Yeah, they're walking all over London. See, that isn't a holiday over here, Walt. Just in America. Yeah, you got another winner for us, Walt, have you? Tobacco. What's tobacco, Walt? A leaf. You've got 80 tons of it. You bought 80 tons of leaves, Walt? Oh, you're beautiful, Walt. Walt, I don't know if you noticed last time. We have plenty of leaves over here in England. See, come fall, we're up to... It's a special kind of leaf. It's some kind of food, is it, Walt? No, not exactly. What do you do with the leaves, Walt? Lots of different things. Are you saying snuff, Walt? And what's snuff? You take a pinch of tobacco and you stick it up your nose. And it makes you sneeze. I imagine it would, Walt, yeah. Goes over very big there, does it? Yeah, goldenrod seems to do it over here, Walt. Tobacco has other uses. You can chew it or stuff it in a pipe. Or you can shred the leaves, put it in a little piece of paper, roll it up. You don't have to tell me, Walt. You stick it in your ear, right? Between your lips. Okay, Walt. And then what do you do with it?
You set fire to it, Walt.
Hey, you want to get on the intercom? I don't want the boys to miss this. You spilled your coffee. What's coffee, Walt? It's a drink you make out of beans. You roast them, and then you pour them in a cup. You drink it in the morning while you smoke your cigarette. I'm still here, Walt. I'm still here. Look, Walt, I'll tell you what you do. Put some of those on the boat. Yeah. If you can hook them with a burning leaf, I'm sure they'll go for the beans. I'm with you, Walt. Do me one favor, Walt. Don't call me anymore.
And Shelley Berman, 50 years later, is really still very pissed about it. Because even though there were performers before that used the telephone call, it's, you know, it's just one little shtick. But Shelley Berman, he just thought that Newhart doing it was like, because, you know, Shelley Berman did it first or first in the modern era, whatever. But Newhart became a star on his first album because of it. And so Berman think he didn't work for it. Kind of like how people feel about Dane Cook, I think. Except I don't think Bob Newhart comes off as the jackass that sometimes Dane Cook comes off as. But nobody likes somebody who looks like they were the overnight success, whether they were or not.
Well, yeah.
So anyway, so I thought.
Also, where is Dane Cook these days?
Well, I'm sure he's still doing comedy in little bits at somewhere, but he's one of those guys. I mean, sometimes he's very, very funny, but there's a lot of attitude involved in it too. And then, you know, it was unsustainable. I'm pretty sure. Like, you can't get that big that fast without having people hate on you, and or getting big that fast with things like, I think he was the MySpace guy, right? He was the first comedian that really conquered the social media.
I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah. So anyway, at least he wasn't destroyed like Carlos Mencia, who was destroyed for good reason. But still, anyway.
Carlos Mencia was destroyed for good reason.
Carlos Mencia, he was for joke theft.
Well, but, okay, I'm not saying he didn't. I'm just saying, don't a lot of comedians steal from each other? Isn't it kind of an unwritten rule?
Well, Again, I'm not a comedian. I listen to a lot of podcasts, though. And what Joe Rogan, the big thing with Carlos Mencia is Joe Rogan confronted him on stage at like the Improv, and it's on the internet, where he talks about how Carlos steals jokes and like he won't, like people won't, they won't do their act if they know that Carlos is in the room because they'll get their joke stolen.
Oh, that's bad.
But you know who else had the reputation of stealing jokes? Robin Williams. He was notorious about it. And it wasn't, you know, it's funny because people give Robin Williams the benefit of the doubt that, well, he's just so manic that he, you know, he remembers something and can't remember whether or not he thought it up himself or heard it from somebody else. But it still
doesn't make it not be theft.
Exactly. It's still kind of shitty to take someone's material. And on the other hand, though, that, you know, especially, you know, I mean, premises are pretty simple. So, you know, I mean, people can have the same ideas all over the place. Actually, I think the Fat Jewish, this guy calls himself the Fat Jewish on Twitter.
I thought it was just the Fat Jew.
Well, it started out as the Fat Jewish, and then it was turned into the Fat Jew on Facebook or something. But
oh, okay.
Yeah, but he got in trouble for retweeting other people's tweets. And
well, because he was getting more famous than the origin, he was also not clearly crediting the fact that it wasn't his original work as much as it was somebody else's work.
And he was getting hired or given a deal by Comedy Central as a comedy writer, when really what he was a comedy aggregator. Luckily, there was lots of backlash on that, so his Comedy Central deal died, as well it should. But, you know, anyway, yeah, I don't know. Again, I'm not a comedian, and I don't know enough about, you know, specific joke theft. Although, Carlos Mencia, unfortunately, his first album, he would have been just fine, but in the DVD extras, they showed, like, an extra little routine, and it was basically a complete ripoff of a Bill Cosby story. And this was back when Bill Cosby was beloved still.
No, I was gonna make a roofie joke about how the audience couldn't quite remember it the next day.
No, I mean, and the essential bit of the joke was that, you know, a father takes his son to like football practice every day and teaches him how to catch and how to throw and how to run, and they do drills and they go through the snow and the rain and the late nights and the weekends, and he supports his son all the way along, goes off to college, you know, keeps supporting him, you know, paying the bills and also supporting him emotionally and financially, and gets him into a good college, and he gets a job, you know, hired by the NFL. And gets on national TV catching a touchdown, and the first thing the son says, looks at the camera and says, like, "Hi, Mom." That's the whole joke. And Carlos Mencia tells basically that whole same story with a little bit of more Mexican flair. And Mark Maron nailed him on that, too. So let me tell you, Maron's podcast has been pretty influential. Actually, Joe Rogan's the one that blew Carlos Mencia out of the water, and then Mark Maron just gave him an opportunity to hang himself, which he did.
Well, that's reassuring.
Yeah. So, anyway. Yeah, so, there's been bitterness and jealousy in comedy back in the 50s and 60s. So, that's nice to know. Michele Berman's a bitter old man now, who realizes that he wasn't the first to do it, but he's like, damn it, it's pretty crappy that Bob Newhart would do it, and rip it off and take money out of my kids' mouths, or food out of my kids' table, or whatever. Money out of my pocket. Yeah, so Merry Christmas, everybody. Ho, ho, and another ho. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com, or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.